Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Welcome to another episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. I am so glad you are joining us today. I'm Dr. Jake, your host, and today we're going to talk about a really incredible, exciting, important issue, one that in the world of betrayal recovery and sex addiction recovery is really a hot topic, and that is the issue of polygraphs. There are lots of ideas, lots of opinions about whether or not we should be incorporating the use of polygraph technology into the disclosure process. So let's talk for just a second about what I mean here in case you're new to the show, new to this area, new to these ideas. After the discovery of secret betrayal, one of the things that we who are professionals in this field have found is that in order to reestablish safety and security for the betrayed partner and really for the relationship itself, it's essential that the one who did the betraying, the one who had the secrets, go through a process of formal therapeutic disclosure to his partner or her partner that has been betrayed. Okay. And so we call this formal therapeutic disclosure. We don't recommend you do this on your own at home. Don't jot some notes down and sit on the bed and just hack it out, because this is a critical part of healing. And so it takes a lot of preparation. It takes a lot of counsel for both the disclosing party and the one who's receiving the disclosure, both the betrayer and the one who's been betrayed, to prepare to make that experience healing. And so one of the first, the couples that I work with, I tell them that first goal post that we're trying to reach, that first marker in this journey toward healing and recovery from betrayal trauma and sexual addiction, is this disclosure process being done, and being done really well and in a healing way. Now, the debate is, should we use polygraphs or not in this process? And some of you who may be new to, you may be thinking, polygraph? Use a polygraph? That sounds over the top. That sounds crazy. That sounds cruel. That's heartless. That's mean. Or some of you might be thinking, oh, that's a great idea. Absolutely. Sign him up for that. Sign her up for that. Well, okay, let's back up. There are a lot of ideas out there. There are a lot of opinions out there. I've got respect for colleagues who are really across the spectrum on this issue of polygraphs, but it's a big deal. And so today I'm really excited to have as my guest, Stephen Kabler. Now, Stephen has worked with numerous law enforcement agencies throughout Texas, and he's the primary polygraph examiner for the Criminal Investigations and Internal Affairs Bureaus for the Harris County Sheriff's Office. That's the basically Houston metropolitan area. So that's a big gig. He specializes in sexual addiction polygraph examinations, and he has conducted over 10,000 disclosure and maintenance sexual addiction polygraph examinations. He and his associates are well-respected, highly trusted. People fly in from around the country just to get their exam done with him. He's a member of the American Polygraph Association and the Texas Association of Polygraph Examiners. He's a licensed Texas polygraph examiner, and he really does great work. You'll enjoy this conversation with Stephen when we get to it here in just a moment. But before we go there, I do just want to remind you about a few exciting things that APSATS has coming up. Again, if you're new to this podcast, new to this whole world of betrayal trauma, APSAT stands for the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists. And there are a few things going on with APSATs that you need to know about. The first is the IRCM training. IRCM stands for Early Recovery Couples Empathy Model. And this is a training that Carol, the coach, the former host of this show, and I are teaching together, with APSATs as the host of this training. And it's for professionals, clinicians, coaches, religious leaders who work with couples who are trying to heal from betrayal. And so that is coming up on March 28th, 2022, just a few weeks from now. And you can go to APSATs.org to find out more about that and sign up for that. Also, further out, so you can plan a little further out, in June, two important trainings coming up. The Multidimensional Partner Trauma Model Training, which is APSAT's signature training on partner trauma, is going to come up in June, as well as their religious leader training for those religious leaders, leaders of faith-based communities who want to be more prepared, better equipped to support and walk through this process with those under your care who've experienced betrayal. Check those out at APSATs.org. One last opportunity I want to share with you. Daring Ventures, my practice, and I, we are hosting the 2022 Choose Connection Summit, a fully online event with 25 plus speakers all talking about how to move forward toward healing from betrayal and sexual addiction. And that is a free event. And you can go to ChooseConnectionSummit.com, ChooseConnectionSummit.com to claim your free ticket to that. Okay, I just wanted to let you know about those opportunities. And now without further ado, I want to turn over to my conversation with Stephen Kabler and talk about the issue of polygraphs. I know you'll enjoy. Well, welcome, Stephen, to Betrayal Recovery Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jake.
I'm excited to have you here and introduce you to our viewers. It's good to have you, my friend. So, hey, to kick this thing off, why don't we start out and just let you share a little bit about yourself. And if you don't mind, give them a little bit of your background before you started doing what you're doing now.
Okay. So I originally, a lot of life happened, right? So that's a whole long story that's really not important or valuable.
Sure.
Early 30s ended up in, I don't remember, 30, 31 maybe, ended up in the military for a very, very short period of time. Ended up in Iraq, get blown up over there. Broke my neck in a couple of places. So I'm in a lot of surgeries for about a year. During that time, the military was paying for me to work on my master's, and that one of the very first classes that I took, there was a guy who was an ADA here in Houston, Texas, and he was talking about this old man that was doing polygraph for 36, 37 years. And I was feeling sorry for myself, man, sitting here all bound up in the neck and everything and wondering what in the world am I going to do with the rest of my life, right? And, man, that topic came up, and I was really intrigued. And long story short, I asked him to introduce us. He did, and here I am today. And so I ended up, to my own surprise, I ended up in law enforcement shortly after that. They told me I was never going to be able to do anything physical again, and I could not accept that answer. So so I did, and I ended up in law enforcement, and I was doing polygraph for them right from the get-go. So those things kind of mended together all at the same time, knowing the right people at the right time. So I did law enforcement first for just a short period before I started getting into the private sector, right? And so kind of it started out just after work, right, after hours. Anyway, and so then I quit officially doing law enforcement to do reserve law enforcement so I could spend more real time doing private polygraph. And really early on, we're talking like the first two and a half years, I did my first polygraph with Milton Magnus. And I'm going to be real honest about it. Yeah, I've shared this story with you before. You know, it was an aftercare maintenance. They're called many different things depending on which program and whatnot. But, and the guy had, and we'll talk more about this kind of thing later, but, you know, he was a porn and masturbation only, and not to minimize that, obviously, right?
Sure.
Something I would learn in time. But I just remember thinking, this might be the dumbest thing I had ever heard of, right? Because, I mean, my history, my family history, you know, they just, no one cared about it, right? And, right. You know, I'd never been in church until this period in my life, really. I mean, as kids, you know, we'd have friends that would take us and stuff like that, but my family just had, never had been. And so Milton had called me. I'd sworn I would never do another one after that. I just thought it was so ridiculous. And he had called me several weeks later and said his examiner couldn't come. And the truth is, he offered to pay me double. And that's the only reason that I took that job that day. And wow. So I got over there and he sat me down and he said, "Hey man, this is going to be a little bit different." And I'm paraphrasing. I'm trying to remember this as best I can.
Sure.
He probably remembers it too, but anyway, he said, "This is a little different." So he starts telling me about a disclosure and how it works. And man, you know, I hadn't, you know, Milton kind of started that questionnaire that I have, you know, I don't remember how many, I think it was about half the size it is now, but he would use it and he'd send me this outline and I'd take that man and I'd just start going, you know, doing what my experience would tell me to do. And I don't know how many pages of new stuff that came out of that interview, but it was, I couldn't even believe that there was that much stuff people could really get involved in, you know. And every time I'd ask a question, he'd make me think of another one to ask. And so when we were done and he passed that polygraph, that was the moment. Not all the information. I mean, I've worked murders and that was nothing crazy to me. Right. But it was him after the test. I mean, he nearly passed out. I mean, he was just,
wow.
I can't describe it. I mean, he just was so a shell of a person, but he felt light as a feather. He literally was lightheaded. I mean, the way he acted was what really shocked me.
In a good way, you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he felt like the world's burdens had just lifted off of him. And I was taken aback by it. I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, this monkey is really real, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, to be honest, I've said this a lot of times and I'll say it again. I've been forever changed since that single polygraph. And that's the truth.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
And I shared a whole lot of change.
Yeah, we have. We have absolutely been working together for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. Done a few hundred polygraphs together. And
yeah.
And so that was the moment, though, for you. And Milton Magnus, longtime CSET here in the Houston area,
yeah.
very instrumental in promoting polygraph as a part of the disclosure process.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know? And you teaming up with him on that.
Yeah,
he was
the reason for the start for me.
Yeah, so from that point, you started working more and more with him, correct? And
oh, yeah.
Kind of became known through him. I know you had people flying in from Boston to test with you for the day and that sort of thing from all over
the country, all over the world is what it's turned into. But yeah, he would have me meet new therapists constantly, and I mean today I'm somewhere close to, I don't know, between 375 and 400 probably. I haven't counted in a while, but
therapists that you work
a
with.
A lot, yeah, therapists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is really important because what I make up, and I've talked with Milton about this as well, like he saw a good thing, right? This is working, this is effective. This is really effective,
yeah.
Right? Because it's different what you do with a sex addict who's coming for an exam is very different than just standard polygraph work, right? And
And
one of the things that, because I get emails from folks from all across the country asking me advice, this and that, and they ask me about polygraph. And one of the things that I always say is, I support it if you have an examiner who gets it, who
yes.
understands. The
yeah.
therapeutic use of polygraph and understand sex addiction. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So listen. So to all the polygraph examiners out there who are gonna hear this and get all offended,
right?
And I hate that. So, let me just start by saying this. First of all, I'm one polygraph examiner, and I have strong opinions about what I do, and they may feel differently about it. And so this is not a competition for me. I'm not trying to compete with anybody. I don't got a name one to give to say, oh, don't go to that person, right? Most polygraph examiners most, not all, they're like everybody else, right? There's some charlatans out there. There's some people, horrible people, right? But most are professional, you know, good people trying to do, you know, do their job right. But yeah, there are some significant differences. You know, if so, polygraph examiners who do sex offender polygraphs, those are part of a therapeutic situation. But I'm telling you, until you've done both, you don't know how different they really are. But here's the scariest part of it, right? Because everybody can't afford to come to Houston, Texas to do a polygraph. And I hate that because I'm real possessive about what I do. I got more work. Trust me, I'm not going to, there's no concern about me not having enough business. I don't mind sharing. That's definitely not it. But I just, most polygraph examiners, you said it perfectly, don't get it, right? So there are some key components to that. And man, this is where people get all up in arms, right? I probably would have been one of those people many years ago. You know, I didn't start out a Christian. I might have called myself that in my younger days because other people thought I was supposed to. But I tell, man, almost every guy that comes in here, my first thing I tell him is, hey, man, I'm a Christian, but I really suck at it. You know, but I do this through that. I don't know what the right word even is for it, but that's what I feel like I'm doing when I'm in here, right? I'm doing God's work. Like, I've done enough in my own life, right, to feel like I need to get some work put in, right, if I'm going to make my place in heaven. And so I'm sure we all feel that way at some point in our life. But anyway, well, for me, this is it. I mean, this is
it's God's a calling saying, for you.
Hey, dude, you've screwed up plenty in your life, but this is what I got for you. This is what I want, and this is what I'm going to get. And so I work that angle when I'm in here. I mean, I can't explain how giving a crap, excuse my language, makes the difference, right? Like most examiners, they don't care if you pass or fail. That doesn't mean they'll be unprofessional, but most of the guys I get to passing, man, I've dragged them through it, like kicking and screaming sometimes, right?
Yeah.
You know, the guy sitting on the desk, sitting over here, needs to care about your sobriety, man. He needs to care that you know a life where you don't have to worry about, you know, leaving your phone on the counter and the stress and all of what comes with that, right? What's the other part of this?
Their marriages. I know you care about their marriages.
So wait, so I have this phrase I like to say to guys, right? Man, and I mean this. So you want your marriage to thrive and not survive, right? I like to make up these little cool sayings all the time, right? But I mean that. I mean, we can all do just bare minimum of sobriety, and you might stay married, maybe, right? But what kind of marriage will you have if sobriety's all you know? So there's so much more to it than just sobriety. And so that's a whole side of this thing that I can't even help it. It just comes into this, right? You know, I have to tell people all the time, I'm not a therapist, right? So I have to be real careful what I'm saying. But when you work with 400 therapists, man, you get free therapy every single day, right? So, I mean, I use this in my own house. My marriage is, I can't even put words to it, but I just have a great marriage. And I've had many failed relationships in my history, and it's because I didn't see all of this. I didn't see, you know, what it was to be a good husband and a good man. And so, you know, do you have to be a Christian to be a good polygraph examiner? You don't have to be. Man, it sure helps.
Well, okay, I appreciate that. And what I see you do, Stephen, because I have had clients who've gone to see other examiners. Okay.
Sure.
And here's what I notice the difference is. I send a guy to you, and depending on your schedule, you may be with him 2, 3, 4 hours. Right? Like I've been witness to that. I've had my day end a lot later than I planned because you know, you're doing your job. I'm not complaining.
Yep.
You know, versus someone who it's a 45-minute process. Right.
Yeah.
It's a 45-minute process, and it's hey, here's these four questions. Let's get clear on the definition of what we mean by these words. And that's it. And that is not what you're doing.
So, OK, so close. Let me make an adjustment to a couple of things you just said. So we got to get this four question thing out of our head.
Thank you.
It's a lot more to a polygraph than that, right?
Right.
And that is a big part of what causes people to bomb when they come in here, because they have that perception, right? Oh, there are only these four questions, right, that are going to matter. And so that's their focus. And so you're not going to have that when you come into my office. I can assure you that's not what's going to happen.
It's 100-plus questions.
For sure. And we're going to cover all of it, right? And so polygraph examiners will hear me say that. And if they're using their brains, they'll know what I'm really saying, right? And so, there's a lot more questions, and even in the test itself, right? You know, we're covering all this stuff in a very long interview, and then we're testing over all that material. But I promise you, we're going to have a lot more than four questions in a polygraph that are going to matter to your wife, and you can take that to the bank. that's for sure. And so, man, every once in a while, Jake, I'm going to lose my train of thought, so you guide me back in.
You're good.
What were you just saying?
Well, we were talking about the difference between what you do as someone who understands sex addiction and this therapeutic use of polygraph versus just kind of pick someone out of the phone book, essentially.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people come to me, man, after what they will call a botched polygraph, right? You know, and I get why polygraph examiners would be offended by that, you know, especially if they fundamentally do the process right. Right. And I can tell you, I could fundamentally do the process right and never help a soul. That's a guarantee. Right. There's so much more that has to go into this kind of polygraph than just fundamentally, you know, following the rules. There's no question about that. At a minimum, you must do that. Right. And I think most polygraph examiners probably do. So, again, I'm not saying that, you know, other polygraph examiners aren't as good at doing polygraphs as I am. I'm not trying to sell that to anybody. But you have to do more than just follow the rules when you're in here. That's got to be the bare minimum. Right. There's a lot of work to get done. And so I think now I know where I lost myself a while ago. You had mentioned about 45 minutes. I wish that were true. I wish a regular polygraph ended in 45 minutes. I'll tell you this. The most basic of polygraphs, for me, there are people that just take a lot longer to do them. Some of us are faster. Some of us are slower. But I will tell you that an average polygraph is going to probably take, even an aftercare, which are typically significantly shorter, right? They're going to take an hour to an hour and a half. The average disclosure on the low end, the low end average disclosure is about 2 hours, right?
Right.
I try to give myself an extra 30-minute window just because I can never know. And what I'm noticing is the better I get at these, the longer they're taking. And so you'd think the better you get, the shorter they're going, but I just, you know, more and more detail I think of all the time. And I think this is a really important thing to say. Jump in, man, if you disagree. I'm just, again, these are my opinions.
Sure.
A full disclosure is just that. It is a full disclosure. If you want to pass a polygraph, don't come in here and say to me, oh, she doesn't want to know about that. Because no offense, but you're not the word that I'm probably going to take on that. Right? I'm going to do my job complete and full, and I will allow the therapist
to make
those decisions, to work that through with the spouse.
I want to back you up on that, and here's why. This is something I learned from you. I learned from you that getting it all out, not putting those sort of arbitrary borders or boundaries or limits out there, helps the subject, helps the client pass. It gives confidence that there's nothing being held back. And so that's part of you helping them. I tell guys all the time, look, you're going to go and Steven is going to want you to pass. He's not going to say you pass if you don't.
For sure.
Okay. But he's going to help you pass by getting it all out there. Now, whether or not we get into the level, and we rarely do, actually, the level of detail that you get into with these guys, often the partners, you know, they don't want that level of detail. I don't want to know every single thing he's looked at. I do too.
Sure.
But him going there with you ups his chances of passing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Jake, if I had a nickel for every time somebody come in here and said, my therapist says we don't give that level, you know, of information. And then they're twisted in their mind because they're like, I know my wife would want to know, right? And so they're conflicted about that, right?
That's right.
And so they're sitting in that polygraph chair, and I can see it as it's happening. It's killing them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and even if they're right, my therapist said it, that's fine. Or her therapist said she doesn't want to know. That's got nothing to do with you getting through a polygraph, right? You got to come in here. You better believe it. If you're going to do a full disclosure, then that's exactly what you have to do. And so when they come in here, I mean, listen, there ain't but one boss in the polygraph suite, and that's me, period, end of story. I don't care how many hundreds of people you run or how important you feel in your job, but when you come in here, I'm the boss, period. And so we're going to ask all those questions. And so if you want a really, really thorough polygraph, come here. If you don't,
yeah.
Go somewhere
there
else.
There you go.
But I care about this. I know this. I know what that guy's going to go home to when he doesn't pass that polygraph. I know what his kids are going to go through. I know what his wife's going to go through. Well, that just matters to me. Whether it's supposed to or not, I don't even care. It matters to me. And so we have to get everything out, plain and simple. You got to feel empty by the time you sit in that chair. And that's what we do. And I don't make the rules about who gets told what. That's why something with we didn't have on here to talk about, but it's important. And it really is important for all the results to go through the therapist. I'll do whatever. Here's what we know. If mama says do it, at the end of the day, I don't care if you're the therapist, the husband, or the polygraph examiner. Guess what's going to happen? That's what's going to happen. We're going to do it, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we don't know that ain't what's best for her. Right.
Right.
It's not best for her to have this information to sit and open and look at all day. And it just it's killing her.
And just to be clear, I mean, we're talking about a level of detail that's beyond just what happened, but like truly painting a picture.
You
right.
Believe.
I mean, we're.
Yeah.
And that's what it's not about withholding anything. It's not that we want to go, oh, well, she's too weak for that. No, it's not that. It's just. Not putting them through creating additional trauma, really.
I'll tell you the only things, Jake, that I don't ask, right? Unless a wife specifically has it in her questions, I don't ask the name of a hotel because why in the world does that matter, right? But if it does matter to her, then they're going to let me know that, and I'm going to ask.
Sure.
I'll never tell a wife no. I may not like questions. We'll talk in a little bit about what can be asked on a polygraph and what can't.
Right. Like
what I can do and what I can't. As far as getting results, but I don't ask for names, right? Unless the wife would know who that person is, and then it becomes relevant, right? It becomes becomes relevant to her, that's for sure. Most of the time, I'll tell the guys, give me some descriptor, right? And they might say, I don't know, Houston bar person, whatever, right? You know, something like that. And I don't ask about things like positions, and I mean, even
none of that color of underwear,
right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm asking about, well, you know, the things, and if that's something you want to discuss here, well, you let me know, we will, so hopefully I answered that question.
And I want to say this too, just for our listening audience, in case you haven't gone through this process yet, what I would encourage you to do is have a conversation with your therapist about what's the level of information that's right for you, because I've worked with women who are like, I don't want to know that. And then I've had other partners who say, well, yeah, I need to know this and this, but that doesn't matter. Yeah, people are different. You know, it's not a one size fits all. So just have the conversation.
I've had every level you can think of, from everything to very little. And so.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yep. I mean, so, all right, let's move forward here.
Sure.
Let's say that there's somebody listening and they're the one that's going to be examined. All right. They're going to be the one sitting in your chair, the chair of a colleague of yours. What are some of the marks of a well-prepared sex addict who's coming in for a disclosure exam?
First I would say everybody's different and every disclosure is different. I mean, I swear there are no two disclosures that are the same.
Sure.
And so, you know, when you're doing what I'm doing, you look for those things that you've seen hundreds of times, right? Now, 8 out of 10 times, if I see this, I know that this should follow. So that's what helps me know what to ask, right? But that doesn't mean it will. I mean, every guy is a little bit different. And it's been the most surprising thing over the years is where guys have drawn lines, right? Where, you know, a wife will often have, no, there's just no way. Yeah, there is. I mean, there are some strange places where guys will draw lines that they just don't go past.
Yeah,
and, you know,
thank
you'll
you for
be
that.
Asking, well, if you did that, why in the world, you know, why draw the line here? But it just happens, right?
Sure.
But a good, to me, a well-prepared exam is simple. I don't care how different they are one from another. When he and I have gone through everything and I am not, I mean, I review everything with them. I don't rewrite every detail, but I do rewrite the majority of the big stuff, right? And so if 90% of what I'm putting in there doesn't have a highlight on it, meaning this is brand new, that's a well put together disclosure, right?
Right.
You know, when I get, you know, just as one example, right, affair partners, and there's just very limited information. If you think your spouse doesn't want to know all the details of that, you're crazy. She, trust me, she will 9 times out of 10. But I'll get very little information about it. And then a guy will come in here and they'll say things like this, right? Like, man, we're talking 30 years ago. Yeah, nobody wants to hear that. That's why it's called work, right? You have to be the one to take it serious. You have to care enough to sit and think that through, right?
Right.
And so I don't feel bad for a guy who says, man, I have a bad memory. If I had a nickel for every guy that says that, work, put the work in, period.
Well, and here's something else you taught me, Steve. In fact, I think this is in the instructions on the questionnaire that you have guys fill out ahead of time, that the standard here is their best honest guess.
Got it.
Right. Yep. And I tell them, look, that machine is not omniscient. The machine does not know all. It does not measure truth. It's measuring truthfulness. Right.
Yeah. Measures what you believe to be the truth. Right.
Yeah.
And so we talk, if I say it once in here, Jake, in a polygraph, I say it 1,000 times, you know, I get it. Your best honest guess. That's what we're asking for. He says, oh, I don't remember. No, but you have an idea. Right. You know, I'll say to them, I get it. You know, wife wants to know clearly, was it 2010? But you can't be 100% certain. But you can think of enough things going on in your life at the time that you can close it in to an area, which leaves us with what? There's a big difference in accuracy and honesty, right? Honesty isn't always accurate, but it's still a truth. It is the best honest truth I can give, right, to the best of my memory. So I don't expect, no matter how hard they work, and they should work, but no matter how hard they work, they may not ever come to complete accuracy. That just may never happen. But you can still tell a whole lot of truth in that inaccuracy. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so this is actually a great segue to the next thing I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, a lot of couples are surprised. I mean, we do 1 or 2, sometimes 3 disclosures a week out of our office here, you know, with you. And, and so a lot of partners are surprised when they start this process that they have work to do to prepare as well.
Yeah.
Right. They've got work. So I want to talk about how partners can prepare. And I think a big part of that is understanding what polygraph does and does not do.
Yeah.
Okay. So can you kind of unfold that for us a little bit?
I can. So I tried to make a little bit of notes about some stuff that I wanted to touch on that, you know, so the difficult part for me with the partners is the therapists have to do most of the work with them, right? I don't really get to do a lot of work, but I can tell you the things that can make the difference about the polygraph. So this is a big thing. I want to throw another subject in with this because I think it's part of what matters, right? You had asked one of the questions on here, when to do polygraph. There's always this big debate about do polygraph before or do polygraph after disclosure, right?
Right.
Well, that, these two topics for me go hand in hand, right? And so I'm going to address both if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So I have.
And hold on, just to clarify. Hold on, just to make sure our listeners understand. You're talking about do they take the polygraph? They prepared the disclosure. They take it with you, and then they share it with their partner. Or do they prepare the disclosure, share it with their partner, and then take the polygraph?
And do the,
so I just want to make that clear.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So I wrestle with therapists about this all the time. It's really frustrating on my end because I feel like I'm the only one that can truly know what is better with regard to that. Not therapy. I'm not challenging that whatsoever. and so I work with about, I'm going to guess, I don't know, therapists out of just the northern states, they tend to, and this ain't a South thing for me. I could care less. Business, wherever it's at. But it just happens to be that the large majority of those therapists in the South do the polygraph after the disclosure. And
wow.
The ones in the northern states, I'll tell you, I'm serious. The ones in the northern states are typically doing, and I don't know if it's that they're going to two different schools or.
That's
you know,
so interesting. I did not know that.
Absolutely. It's, I mean, huh. Man, there's like a line that gets drawn, right?
Okay.
And so I've worked both. And in the beginning, I didn't have a dog in the fight. I could have cared less, right? I mean, to me, you come, you tell the truth one way or another. But there has been so much fallout with the polygraphs that are done before. Listen, therapists are just like polygraph examiners. There's a lot of ego that goes
come
on.
No.
No, it's shocking, right? Hey, trust me, we're the worst, and I'm not innocent, right? And so, but I'm the one that catches most of that fallout, right? And so here's what happens. If you do the polygraph prior to the disclosure, this is what happens. And I know the theory is, well, if they fail the polygraph, we just cancel the disclosure. I'm not going to argue with whether that is a good or bad thing. I don't personally like it. And I can assure you, mama ain't going to like it, right? But but at least I understand what the therapists are saying. Hey, we'll avert that damage, right, until they're ready. Okay, I understand. But here's where – so I get that, and I say to them, okay, right, I hear what you're saying. I'm not arguing. So I see this as either way when something bad happens, right, either one is negative. But there's one that's a lot more negative, a lot more damage is done, right? And so to me, that's what this is about. Doing the polygraph before, when it goes bad, there's a lot more damage, right? Actually, let me say this. When it goes good, there's a lot more damage. And here's one. Guy comes in, he passes the polygraph, right? Now, she's asked questions prior to, but here's the reality. She didn't know what she should be asking. She's got no idea.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Because she doesn't
That's
know
right.
what his whole truth is. Right? So
yep.
After the polygraph, she comes up with these questions that aren't standard questions. They're not. I couldn't even possibly know they exist. Right?
Exactly.
And he may have disclosed the information very generically. Right? Because I didn't know to attach this to a specific detail about their life.
Exactly.
Right?
But you
and
told
so
me she, this on that date. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So she comes after the polygraph and she gets the disclosure and she sees all this and man, she spends the next 24, 48 hours going insane. She needs to know this and she needs to know that and she needs to know that. And how in the world did he pass his polygraph? Right? He got over in the polygraph and that happens more time than you can imagine. So here's how you stop that from happening, right? Guys, again, this is just my opinion, okay?
So that's what we brought you here for.
That's all I can give, right? So
yeah.
With the other 350 therapists, I'm doing it after. And I love it. It's so much less stress on everybody. And here's why. Because I tell everybody, and listen, we've adapted this as time's gone on. It's not like we said, you know, this is set in stone. This is forever. Well, we're learning too. I'm learning all the time. And so here's what we've learned. So we used to do polygraph. We tried it. If we're going to do it at 9 a.m, we're doing polygraph at 1 p.m. You know, that's fresh, right? But here's the reality. I mean, it's 30 years worth of stuff. What's another day or two, right? And so, you know, fresh is a relative term, right? And so,
sure.
So anyway, so he comes in. He doesn't commit. He does with you guys the disclosure. She gets that disclosure, and then we wait a day, a minimum. I'm happy if they waited more than a day, but at least one day, right? And I know that's hard for the wife, so one day we can work with that, right? She needs it, and she needs it soon, okay? And I get that. But at least one day for her to process all this new information so she can say, wait a minute, on this day you told me right? What about when you left at Christmas for 2 hours, you know, and we find out here, oh, well, that was that one of those 300 prostitutes that he told you about happened to be on that day. But I didn't know he left that day for 2 hours. And why would I? There were 300, right? And so, but she's the only one that will know that important information. So she gets all her questions get answered at the polygraph, right? She gets confirmation on everything she wanted to know, right? Important to note, it's good when she comes up with those questions for him to have a chance to answer them before he comes here, right? Remember, this is the most important thing that I think gets lost in polygraph. My job is not to pull a disclosure out of your husband. My job is to confirm that he's done it right himself. If he never sees the questions, that I am now doing the therapist job and I'm doing a disclosure with the guy. That's not what my job is. I end up doing that a lot, right? But that mostly happens, like in our case, that mostly happens because they simply didn't do all the work. And you can only, you know, you can only make a guy do so much at the end of the day. And so it's coming here and, you know, guys walk in and, you know, they're looking around the room and like, oh my God, it just got real, right? And so a lot comes out because of that, right? And so, but anyway, that I think it's a real important thing to remember is that my job is not to pull the disclosure out of your husband, though I will do that if that's what I have to do. And so, and that's what I do end up doing a whole lot. But you were talking about, you know, being prepared and being properly prepared. I should really be doing nothing but confirming that the information you've given is correct. That's what I should be doing. Unfortunately, that's not, doesn't end up being the case. But that's not as much the therapist's job oftentimes that it is the guy just, you can't make them do the work.
That's right. So, that's right.
You know, at the end of the day, I mean, if it's all, then...
Yeah. And I mean, we here, our team, you know, here at Daring Ventures, we want guys to be prepared and we will do our best. And there are still those guys who it doesn't get real to them until they're sitting in front of you, you know, and they see that chair and all the straps and all, you know, all of that. And then it's like, okay, it's go time. You know, that's part of the process. So just to kind of reflect back to you, you're saying, you know, it can be done either way, but in your experience, you know, share the disclosure, give the partner time to process, come up with those clarifying follow-up questions, give him a chance to answer those, then send him over there with his disclosure and the answers to her questions and let you examine all of that.
That's the only way that she's not going to have a million questions after. It's the only way she's going to really feel like she can move forward. And that's what disclosure is all about. It's getting to move forward, right?
That's right.
And it's, so... Yeah. Yeah. Just if you're doing
it's
if
so
you're
important.
Doing disclosure before, that often won't happen.
Okay. Right. Because I'm glad you said that. Just to kind of bring it back to, you know, this is the APSATS podcast, and APSATS has the multidimensional partner trauma model with three phases of healing of the trauma. And the first phase is safety and stabilization. And I understand that disclosure is a part of that first phase. I can't even talk. First phase that allows people to move into a place where they can begin to grieve, which is phase two. How can I grieve if I don't know my truth? How can I grieve if my mind's still spinning going, am I safe? Do I know it all? Was it this? Was it that? Who knows? Who doesn't? Right? So thank you.
I will say this, Jake. I'll add this just real quick. I'm here to support the therapist and I will do whichever way they want, but we're talking about what's the better way. And it is my strong opinion that the only right way, well, I can't say it's not right. The best, in my opinion, the best way is to do the disclosure after. I feel strongly about that. I'll do it.
So here, here's my opportunity. I'm going to put out there an open invitation. If you disagree with Stephen on this, shoot me an email, jake@apsats.org, and I'll give you equal airtime to make your case. In fact, maybe I'll bring Stephen back. We can do it like debate style or something like that. Okay. Well, okay. Hey, let me ask you this. A few common myths or fears about polygraph. I thought of three. You may have some others that you know of that you hear. Here's one I thought of though. Polygraph is so unreliable. Let's address that head on.
Yeah, that honestly, that's probably the biggest issue, right?
Sure.
And so is polygraph perfect? Well, the first thing I say to every guy that comes in here is I'm not selling that. That is not what I sell. It is not perfect. And if you look up actual scientific data, right, it's going to tell you that it's not 100% perfect. You know, polygraph on an average, and a lot of things matter in that average, right? But on an average, about 85% accurate, right? Which means what? We're going to miss some. That's horrible. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. But it is also the truth. That's our reality, right? But let me say this. You know, people talk about eye detect and all that stuff, and I know, well, I'm going to probably really catch it about this, but you know, they've come and they've tried to sell it to us. Here's the thing. I think they were selling it to us like for $5,000, and we sat, went through a whole class about it. Here's the reality, folks. It was $5,000. If that's all it took to add that arsenal to what I can do for a living and make a lot more than that on it, oh, I would have done it in a minute. It just doesn't work. I mean, that's my opinion. It certainly doesn't have the level of accuracy as polygraph. That's for sure. That's my opinion, and I feel the need to debate that. That's my opinion. So there's a lot of things out there that people will sell you. None of them are perfect. Here's what I will tell you: without polygraph, here's what you got: a hope and a prayer. And that's about it. And here's what we've proven. You know, a lot of times. What guys are asking the wife to do without polygraph is take the word that they've just destroyed, obliterated,
So
I would tell you this, 85% is a heck of a lot more than zero.
And I understand that 85% may be sort of what's published in the studies. I'll say anecdotally, though, I have done hundreds of polygraphs with you. Okay, yeah. Over the years, twice, I know of two times that it didn't work.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So with all the therapists, I bet you we're talking like somewhere in the realm of 11,000 sex addiction polygraphs, right? How many have failed? Hundreds I've missed, right, out of 11,000. Mm-hmm. And I mean low end hundreds. But probably a couple of hundred, 250, something like that, that I've missed in 11,000. And I'm going to tell you, so those, most of the time, I'm trying to think of what are some of the main reasons that we miss. I mean, listen, I'm not a psychiatrist. So I don't know who is a sociopath and who is not, right? But you know, from time to time, we run across that, right? And so that's a big one that gets us. I mean, we're just defenseless against that. But I will say this, the reason our numbers are so low, right, is this. By the time they get to me, most of the guys, so 85%, that I would say that's criminal testing, right?
Right.
I would not say that it's 85% in sex addiction. I would say it's higher than that. And I couldn't tell you what percentage that might be, but I can tell you that it's higher. And here's why, because by the time they get to me, most of these guys have given up. Most of them have given over, right, to it.
Right.
They want it.
They're
gone.
Trusting the process. Yeah.
You better believe it. And so certainly there are those guys who save it to the last minute. And when they realize and listen, I'm not going to tell you how everything goes in here, but you know, there are those moments that we like to call it a come to Jesus moment sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have those frequently in here, right? And when they know I've got their number, they're going to give in 90% of the time. And so those numbers are better for sex addiction. Yeah. And I attribute that to the guys taking the test. You know, they get to this place where, man, so much is out there already. I've done so much damage. Now's my chance for freedom. I might as well throw it all in there to have a prayer at being free of this stuff, right?
That's right.
And I'll tell you, you know, this is what they all learn to be true. It's not fun. Sex addiction's not fun. That's the biggest lesson I think all these guys learn at the end of the day is that they have created this brutal lifestyle, right, that just nobody can last in. And so anyway, the numbers are far better because most of the guys want them to be.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another myth or concern or fear. I'm so nervous. I've got so much anxiety. I'll never be able to pass a polygraph.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give $1 million to the first guy that comes in here who isn't nervous when he takes a polygraph, if I could trust him to be honest. Nobody in the history of polygraph has probably ever not been nervous. I'll tell you this. If I say this quote all the time. If nervous is all it took to fail a polygraph, I'd be out of business. Because nobody. I've had to take 3 polygraphs to get a license and to get a couple of contracts. And it's terrible. I mean, you think that because you do it for a living that you're impervious to all the ways the body will react to it just because you know. You're not. Trust me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Wow.
Everyone's going to be nervous. 100% of the people are going to be nervous. Now, listen, are there some medical differences in anxiety, right? And, you know, the different levels of anxiety and nervousness? Well, of course there are, right? And I'm not a doctor. So I'm not going to say that no one has ever had so much anxiety that it prevented them from passing a polygraph. I'm not going to say that because that wouldn't be true. But I promise you, that's like the insignificant number. Right.
And I've got faces of specific clients coming to mind, guys who I know these are like on the curve of anxiety way, way high. And they all passed. Yeah. They all passed
because they choose to pass.
Yeah. Because, yeah, were they anxious? Sure. But they also weren't trying to hold back. And
that's right.
And they did fine. OK,
how about this? If you come in and tell the truth, you're going to do good on a polygraph.
Yeah. All right. One more myth or fear. Okay. And I hear this from partners a lot. My husband is so good at lying. I know he's going to beat the polygraph.
That's one of my favorite ones. And so every time I get to talk to the wife, I say the same thing to him. If I had a nickel, I mean, Lord, if I had a nickel for every husband, I tell you what, we got quite a world out there with all these championship, you know, expert liars that could pass a polygraph. It's a wonder we're not got a million spies right here in the United States. But it's a natural thing for the wife to say that. And let me tell you what she doesn't realize, right? And she's going to be learning all this over time, right? Is that the husbands haven't fooled them nearly as much as they thought. Most of the time, they let their heart tell their brain's lying, right? Most of the time, they've had these weird feelings that they just didn't trust, right? Because their heart said, no, they would never do that to me, right? And so they were deceived. That when a guy's had, you know, most of our clients, we have some that are 2 and 3 years, you know, 5, 6 years, but that's really not the majority. Unfortunately, we don't catch a lot of them that early. These are 20 and 30 year marriages, right? I mean, who couldn't be an expert at anything in 30 years? Not an expert at lying, an expert at lying to you, right? He knows just how indignant to act, right? How angry to pretend to be, you know, he knows everything, how to look or, you know, just how to fool you because he's had year after year after year to hone that skill. But when he comes in here, he's just another average Joe.
That's good. That's a good point. I never even thought about it like that.
It's true.
Man, we're about to wrap it up. I want to ask you one last thing, though. This kind of brings it full circle to where we started. I know because I hear from the guys when they come back from your office and they say, man, that Steven guy, I was scared when I walked in there, but he was all right. And he really talked to me and he really shared with me. I know you care about the clients who sit in that chair across from you. Let's just say you got some future clients out there listening to this, coming to see you. What do you want them to know? Do you got some words of encouragement, advice, any sober warnings to give?
Man, here's all I can say to every single one of them. Man, we're being given opportunities here, right, that we don't deserve. We haven't earned, and we can't deserve or earn, right?
Wow. Yeah.
You know, for a woman to give a second chance to a man who's done the things that we have, just what incredible people. We wouldn't do it. Men wouldn't do that, right? I mean, women have such capacity to forgive. It truly is amazing. I mean, it really, really is. I mean, oh my God, you're given a lifeline. Take it, right? I am not here to hurt anybody. I can assure you of this. I will be no one's obstacle. Not happening. I'll drag them. I'll lay down in the mud for them to walk on if that's what it takes to get them to a passing polygraph. I assure you that. But let me be real clear about something. lie to me, it's going to be a bad day.
Yeah.
And said, that ain't what I want. That is not what I want, man.
Sure.
I want every single one of these guys to pass, because passing means possibly saving your marriage and absolutely knowing true recovery.
Wow.
That's for
sure. That's right.
You know, passing a polygraph's the bare minimum, guys. That's the bottom. That's where we start.
That's right. I tell the guys, you come back with a passed polygraph from this disclosure, that's not the finish line. You just qualified for the race. You
that's
just
right.
qualified for the race.
Time. Yeah. I tell them every single time, man, hey, that the work just begins today, right? Sobriety is the platform you stand on to start.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's good. You know, I think about my own recovery as someone in recovery myself, and how at the very beginning, when I got honest, when I embraced rigorous honesty, that I finally felt what integrity was. Because in my whole life, because I had secrets going back to my childhood, in my whole life, I'd never known what integrity was until that moment. And I remember thinking, I never want to give that up.
For sure.
It feels
so
good.
I never
want to give it up.
I see so many guys find that moment, Jake. I see so many guys find that moment. Mm. You know, big, burly, burly, manly men just break down, you know, because for the first time, you know, they want to celebrate, man. You know, I have to remind a lot of guys when you leave here, hey, she's not over there waiting for a party, bro. That is not
right.
what she's looking for. She's devastated.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well,
Stephen, thank you so much for a great conversation. I appreciate you and the work you do, my friend. You do a good job.
It didn't create more good or bad than good. So, always good working with you, man. You're one of my favorite therapists. I love doing work with you.
All right.
I think we all work together well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Have a good one. You take care.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@apsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.